Have you ever met someone and you feel an instant connection with them? That's how I feel about the two women that I'm interviewing on today's episode. I met Anne Marie just 3 nights ago. And by the end of our evening, we had had dinner together, we had prayed together, and we had gone to a strip club together. Stay tuned for a fascinating episode. Hi, friend. You're listening to Find Hope Here. I'm your host, Teresa Whiting, author, speaker, ministry leader, friend, and fellow struggler. This is a podcast about the messy, complicated, painful parts of life, but also the beautiful, joy-filled hope that Jesus promises. Each week, we dig deep into God's word together and talk about how his truth impacts our everyday lives. I'm not going to ask you to sit with me and have coffee because I seem to have my best conversations while I'm just doing life. So I'd love to hang out with you as you walk or fold laundry or drive to work. You're invited to join me in pursuing the hope God promises. No matter where you are or where you've been, I pray you always find hope here. Let's jump in to today's episode. Welcome, friends. Today, I'm so excited to introduce to you my two guests, Anne Marie. As I mentioned, a couple of nights ago, I actually met these two women, and there was just this instant connection between us, and I'm so honored to have them on my podcast. Anne Marie Britt is the Director of Development for the First Space Coast Foundation. She is passionate about those vulnerable women in our community. She advocates for those living in the margins of society. Her work focuses on homeless families, foster care, women working in the adult entertainment industry, and those struggling with addiction and mental illness. Anne Marie was a foster mom for 5 years and gained two daughters through adoption, and she is the proud single mom to three children. Anne Marie Guskey is a wife and mother to four children. She resides with her husband and kids in Merritt Island, Florida. Anne Marie has always had a tender heart for women. In 2020, as the world was shutting down, God called Anne Marie to full-time work as the executive director of Agape Women's Center. And through her work there, Anne Marie's eyes were opened to the horror of human trafficking. She saw that the services of a pregnancy crisis center put them at the front lines of serving women in the sex industry. Now, every month for almost 3 years, as an outreach team from Agape goes into the strip clubs to meet women where they are, they provide gifts and resources, and most of all, they let women know they are seen and valued. I can't tell you both how honored I am to have you on the podcast today. I'm just so excited. So I would love for each of you maybe to tell us just a little bit more about yourself and the work that you do. So Anne Marie Britt, why don't you go first?
Awesome. Well, it's so exciting to be with you today. I always, from a young age, felt called to do more for the people around me. I can't describe it any more than that. I grew up Catholic. I went to a Catholic school and we were a small community, but I don't know if it was I just believed the nuns or what was happening, but I really, really believed that I was put on the earth to help other people around me. It was just something I naturally gravitated toward. I cared deeply for my classmates. And as I got older and went to college, I felt very strongly that I needed to give back. My mom and parents instilled in us that we always were to volunteer. My sister was a candy striper. My first job was a volunteer role at the local public library, putting away books. I just believed that that was part of everyday life. And I knew that God had called me for something bigger. Now, I will say that sitting in that Catholic mass one day, I saw a woman holding a baby that I could clearly see was not hers. She had eight children of her own, and she often had other infants in her hand. And there was something in my heart that day that thought, that's foster care or whatever she's doing, I want to do one day. And it was a deep secret that I had kept for many years. And then as only God does in redeeming, after I went on to college and volunteered and got married and had a baby of my own, that marriage ended after a lot of addiction and mental illness on his part. And I thought I had given up that dream of foster parenting until I moved to Colorado Springs and the Lord put everyone around me that could support me and help me grow into that. And also he really led me that year into what I called my year of no fear, where what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And if I fully surrendered and trusted God in my steps, and it led me to the best possible life, the hardest, I will say. I kept telling the Lord, I don't want to be single. Why are you doing that, Lord? But it brought me to learn deeply about the vulnerable of our community, to have children in my home that suffered homelessness. I was shocked by the volume of homelessness and what that really looked like. That meant sleeping on a couch. That meant living in a car. That meant living in a tent. And that's where my oldest daughter came from. And her story is complicated and difficult. And then as I was adopting her, her sister was born. And so I was able to adopt both of them and promptly returned from Colorado Springs, where I went to go find myself home because I needed my mom, because I was then a single mom to three. And the Lord continued to bless me as I surrendered it all to him. I was able to work. I had a background of sales and marketing. I always did my volunteering for fun and then thought only in a perfect world would I be able to do this kind of thing for a living. But I could never make a living this way. And the Lord carved away every step for me to work in fundraising and development. And I was able to land at the foundation and fundraise on behalf of all the things I'm passionate about.
Wow. So,
God.
I love that. I love that story. And when you said the year of no fear, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? I was like, wow, imagine if we all lived like that. Mm-hmm. What would I do if I wasn't? I want to hear more about that year, but it's amazing already, just the little bit you've shared.
I will tell you, people think you're crazy. Well, what if this happens? And what if that happens? I'm like, but what if it doesn't? And yes. That's what I did.
Love that. Love that. Okay. Anne-Marie G, you share your story.
Well, so I always grew up with a love for the church. From the time that I was a little girl, God just planted this deep love in my heart for the church. I loved being involved in church ministry. I loved being there. When the church doors were open, I wanted to be there serving. I really saw the church as another family in my life. And so I feel like God just took that love that I had for church at an early age and just blossomed that into ministry as I grew older. I remember as I graduated from college, really feeling torn about what I was supposed to do next. I had a degree in communications and public relations, but that wasn't really where I felt like God was leading me. I had a heart for the broken and I had a heart for women. And I remember seeing a sign that said something about, are you pregnant, scared? And I thought, I wonder if that's a ministry I could become involved in. And I didn't think much about it. And then a few days later, I was working a little part-time job at a restaurant and this lady walked in and started talking to me. And she said, oh, by the way, I'm the director for this crisis pregnancy center that was right down the road. And so I said, wow, I'm really interested to hear about that ministry and what you do. And so God just opened the door for me to be able to become involved there. And I remember after seeing my first client, I came home and said to my family, I found the job that I want to do for the rest of my life. And what God did in that moment was really open my eyes, yes, to the unborn, but also to that unborn child's mother. And God just really broke my heart for women and for women that are in that situation of an unplanned pregnancy, and really gave me a desire to want to speak up for those women and provide compassionate care for them. And so after I got married and had children, God continued to allow me to be a part of a pregnancy center. We lived in different parts of the country. And so wherever we were living, I sometimes had a job at a center or would volunteer at a center. I also led worship. And so I was always involved in the church. And those were just some of the things that God was doing while I was home with my kids and raising them. And then when my oldest turned 18, it was 2020. And as the world was shutting down, God opened that door, and only God could have opened this door. It wasn't on my radar to look for a job. I was approached about becoming the director for Agape Women's Center. At the time, it was Agape Pregnancy Center. And I felt like that was what God was calling me to do. And so I said yes to that call. And within the first month of being here at Agape, we had a client that we found out was being trafficked. And we originally missed those signs that she was being trafficked because we thought she was in a domestic abuse situation. And so what we learned was that we didn't know much about human trafficking. Mm-hmm. I thought if a woman is being trafficked, she's going to know she's being trafficked. She's going to come ask for help and ask for you to help her get out of that situation. But that was not at all what happened. And that isn't what most women are going to do when they're in that situation. And so it was after she left that we began to realize the seriousness of the situation she was in. So we had her come back to our center and we took a different approach with her. And I am happy to say there's a long story with her, but she did get out of that situation and she has a beautiful little girl that just turned 3 years old and she is safely living nearby and with her family and has received a lot of healing, still has more healing to do, but she is out of that situation. But her story opened our eyes to that is happening. It's happening here in our county. And because we were a pregnancy center, that put us in the front lines of receiving women that are in that industry.
Wow. Already in the 2 minutes that we've all been talking, I've gotten chills like five times. You know, we hear, I think a lot about my kids. They're young adults right now, and they're trying to figure out what they're doing and where they want to go with their lives. And I just hear both of you talking about the passions that God puts on our hearts. Like his will is not some mystery out there that we got to figure out. Like he has put these passions in your heart. And then he opens doors and you just step through them. Even if they're scary, like you take one step and he just leads and does amazing things when you say yes. And it's just really exciting to talk to you and to hear how that has happened for both of you. How does your story, and I think you both kind of explained this already a little bit, but how does your story and your personal experiences play into this calling of reaching vulnerable women?
I think for me, I always grew up feeling like I wasn't enough. I always felt like I was the odd person at school and always felt some form of rejection. And so I think God used that from an early age to give me a heart for people that feel rejected, that maybe feel broken, that feel like they're not enough. And so I feel like God used that heart for me as an adult to just connect with other women that feel that same sense of rejection and hurt in their life. Mm.
And for me, it was how it touches everyone's life. I didn't know. I was very naive and innocent. Just from living a simple life in a faith home, I didn't know there was mental illness and addiction and the way that it could trample a family, the way that it was so deceitful. And then that would, and this happened in my marriage, it just crumbled what I had built, years of self-esteem. And so you would think, oh, I would have told you before, oh, I'm never going to fall prey to that. I mean, some women do, but not me. And it puts me, I feel like, in a vulnerable position with the women. I when they say they don't feel worthy or they don't feel that they have shame, we all unless you've been through something hard, can recognize that in each other. And I see now how God uses all those hard things that we've personally been through, that it's not a they and us, it's a we.
So you've mentioned that, or even I mentioned in the beginning, that you go into strip clubs and you work with women that are in this sex work industry. And I would love to hear you talk about what is that like? Like, what's a typical night look like? What do you do? What do you say? How does this work? How did you even get into the strip clubs in the first place?
So for us at Agape, as we began to learn more and more about human trafficking, we saw that strip clubs are often the gateway to human trafficking, and a lot of women that are working in the strip clubs are being trafficked. They have a pimp, they are going to the strip club and working, and then giving their money back to their pimp. Also, we know that 100% of the women working in a strip club are being sexually exploited. And over 90%, according to a lot of statistics that I've read, say that these women were sexually abused from a child up. And so we felt like knowing those statistics, that put us in a position to be able to go in and minister to these women. And so we approached some of these clubs with just, hey, we're a nearby ministry, we provide these services, could we leave some items, some gifts for the girls that have our card attached to it? And I was thinking, oh, the girls will like the gifts and it has our card. And if they need to find out more, they'll contact us. But God opened the door so much more than what we desired or thought was even possible. And he opened the door for us to go into the club. And so one of the managers said, well, if you really want to make an impact, why don't you come on a Friday night and hand the gifts out yourself? And so we looked at each other, our chaplain and I, and said, okay, let's do it. And so we went in on a Friday night with this little basket of gifts, and I felt really scared and I was all excited until I got to the front door, and then I thought, what are you doing? And but we walked in, and I fell in love with that ministry, and the girls received us so well and were so appreciative of the gifts that we were bringing. And God just broke my heart that night for the girls that are working there, but not just for them, but for the managers that are working there, for the customers that are there. It's all dark and there's such a stronghold. And God just opened my eyes to that. And so from that club, he added two other clubs, and we are now in three clubs every month where we're going and building relationships with these women. And I would say the big thing that we have learned throughout all of this is to be consistent. Some nights are going to look different than others. Some nights we go in and we feel like it was an okay night. We didn't have any real meaningful conversations. But I try for us to not focus on that when that happens, because it really is meaningful, because what these girls are seeing is that consistency, that we're showing up every second Friday of the month when we say we're going to come, and that they are learning that they can trust us, that they can rely on us, that we're going to do what we say we're going to do.
I can completely relate to that being scared, because, you know, we met Friday night through a mutual friend. We had dinner together, and literally like three nights ago, I think it was, that we met, and we're sitting at dinner and talking, and you were sharing your ministry, and you said, and we're going to the club tonight. Do you want to come? And I was like, oh, scary. Yes, I want to come. Let's do this. Let's do it. And so my friend Jenny Zentz, who has the Intertwined Life podcast, she's the one who introduced us. And so together we went with the two of you, and it was very, I would say, intimidating. Like, what am I doing here? This is so foreign to me. I felt uncomfortable, but also watching these girls come in and out. So basically we spent the evening in the locker room, not like out on the, in the club with everything going on, but we're in the locker room where the girls are coming in and out. And as so many of them walked in, I just felt like these are girls that would be like my daughter's age. They're her friends that would come to my house. It just looks so ordinary and innocent, you know, until they get dressed and they do their thing. But it was very eye-opening to me of like, these are just normal people. That was, I think, my takeaway of, I don't need to be afraid of these people or of a ministry like this. But Anne Marie, Britt, what was it like for you, especially the first time you went, and maybe what are some of the things that you've experienced?
Yeah, what you just said is exactly what I love about it, is that somehow the world has told us that these are others. These are other people. These are people that, I don't know, aren't doing what I'm doing, right? You're always kind of looking, engaging. These are our friends. These are our neighbors. These are our friends' children that are in the clubs working. These are also the same people who are consuming it as consumers, watching it and participating in it. The first time I went, Anne Marie and the team had been going for about 2 years, I want to say, when I started going with them. I'm a backup and I fill in when other women can't go. I felt out of place, like you said, intimidated. I felt like I didn't belong, that I was in the wrong, that I stood, you know, that whole Sesame Street, one of these things does not look like the other. I would glance at a mirror in that dressing room, locker room area, and think, what are you doing here? Because you look like you're sticking out like a sore thumb. But what made me stop focusing on that was the girls. Those women are happy to see us, and they have real relationships and conversations with us. It's not about me. It's about my hope of Jesus coming through the door, my resources, my attitude, my love for them. That's all coming from the community and from Christ. That, you know, this night that we all went, I forgot to mention it, when we left the club that night, a girl came off the floor, which tells me she was worried about it out there. And she walked right up to me and said, do you all help with rental assistance, with paying for rent? And we don't give out money like that, but we do offer community resources. I'd love to hear more of her story to see where we can get her help. But she trusted us enough to come and ask us that. So I've asked her to come and, you know, come see us at the center. Let's see what we can do. Told her where we were. We're trusted there. And that means so much more than me worried about what I looked like when I walked in, or concerned that what if I saw somebody? I've had this thought. What if I go through the club? Because the dressing rooms are often in the back. And I go through the club and I see a man I know from the community watching a girl on the pole. What would I do? Like, I had to have these thoughts. And what I love that the girls say to us is, you're not like, and it breaks my heart when they say this, but they'll say, you're not like other Christians or church ladies we know. And it makes me sad because they think they're being judged, they're being shamed, and they're not welcome by our churches. And that is sad because we are not anything other than a hospital for the broken. That's what the church is.
Yep. Yes. And I know you've mentioned to me some of the stories. I'd love to hear, what are some of the changes you've seen, the life change, even if it's not a complete turnaround, what small steps have you seen in the women that you've worked with, and maybe something interesting or something encouraging?
I love that they're trusting us to come out of the club if they do have a pregnancy. I mean, we are at the core of what we do, a pregnancy resource center. And when they are pregnant and they come to Agape, especially today, you know, there are so many choices today for women to go into a pharmacy and pick up an over-the-counter abortion pill. So when they have a pregnancy, an STD, an STI, they call it now, anything that they need help with that's women related and private, I love that they can trust us and can come to us. That's life changing. There are women, Anne-Marie spoke to one at the club, and I'll let her tell that story, you know, just Friday night, where she has decided to parent. That's what we're there for, but also that they'll say almost always when you get in a really long relationship with them, they'll say, I'm not here for long. I don't want to be here for long. They have dreams and aspirations to do something other than this work, but it is survival for them. And I feel like every time we're able to talk to them, we bring them that hope and plant that seed that this is not where it is for you. You have somewhere else to be, and we believe in you.
That's beautiful.
There are so many stories that come to my mind when I'm thinking about the girls that we've built relationships with. The one that Amory Britt just spoke of, she came to us several weeks ago and was pregnant. And when she first came to Agape, she was very abortion minded. And after just being able to come in and meet with our staff and our volunteers and share her story in a safe place and hear that she has options, for women that are facing an unplanned pregnancy, they often feel like they don't have options. They're feeling a lot of pressure from people in their lives to choose an abortion because an unplanned pregnancy is a crisis. And so abortion often seems like the quick and easy solution. And so when she came in and just was able to sit and take time to hear about all of her options and then have an ultrasound, it just helped her feel more at peace and that there was hope and that she didn't have to make a decision right away. And so she came back a few weeks later with a smile on her face and said, I'm going to parent. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to see her at the club and she was drinking her water and she said that she is trying to make an exit plan out of the industry. And so that thrilled my heart on Friday night to hear. But we have women that we have worked with for several years. We have a lady that we worked with that has been coming to Agape for Bible studies that we have prayed with and prayed for and have developed a friendship with her. She is a friend to all of us, but there's a stronghold there and years of trauma that made leaving really hard for her. And finally, about 2 months ago, she called me and said, I can't do this anymore. And so we are walking with her day by day, step by step, and helping her exit that industry and help her to discover the life that we know that Jesus has for her. And we've had opportunities where we walked with women to their car after they got fired. And through that conversation, we're able to share the gospel. And in this parking lot of a strip club to have a dancer give her life to Jesus Christ. So many but God stories that we've been able to be part of.
Wow. Wow. There's two questions coming to mind now. One of them is, you know, I'm thinking of the woman who is listening and just heard your story about the woman who chose life and the hope of that and the joy of that. But she's listening and saying, I didn't choose life. And I know that you both have walked with women through post-abortive care. So, and how do you minister to those women?
Yeah. So 1 in 4 women have had an abortion. And so I would say to her that she is not alone, that there are millions of women that share a similar story. And we at Agape want those women to know that there is hope and there is healing through Jesus Christ. Jesus has forgiven them and he came to give us abundant life. And he wants her to have the freedom and healing that he has for her. And so we would invite her to connect with a pregnancy center. She could reach out to us at Agape and we could help connect her with a center in her area. And we would encourage her to go through post-abortion recovery. We have found that that is so critical for women that are dealing with the grief from a past abortion to get the healing that we know that Christ has for them and to let them know that it is normal to grieve. They need to grieve. That is a loss and they need to allow themselves that space and time to feel that loss and grieve that loss.
Thank you. That's a comfort. I didn't know. I didn't realize that the statistic is 1 in 4. It's a pretty high statistic.
It is. And we've heard from those women that every year, especially Christian women who are in the church, sit silently on Sanctity of Human Life Sunday in their own grief. And we wanted this specific Sanctity of Human Life in 2024 in January. We spoke directly to them this year. We felt like you're seen as well. And Jesus loves you and you're going to be okay. And I've seen so many women coming through on the other side of it with a fire to help other women come through it as well. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you've talked a lot about the church and the perceptions that the church has, you know, like these are the other people, these are the sinners. You know, when I'm walking into the strip club on Friday night with the two of you, I'm thinking, is this where Jesus would have gone? Like, would he have gone to hang out with these people? Would he have been there in ministry? So I guess one of my questions I have is what is your end goal? Like, what's your ultimate goal of this ministry? What are you hoping for as you walk into the clubs on a Friday night?
Well, don't tell the management we want to empty the club.
Hopefully they're not listening to this episode. I kind of feel like they're not my target audience.
Well, yeah, I mean, we would love to be able to see the clubs close down. Unfortunately, we know that's a big task. And as one girl leaves, there's four or five more that are entering that space to work. And so our heart is really on the one. Yep. And to go in and focus on the one that God opens that door for us to have a conversation with and build connection with, whether that's helping one find rent assistance, one to help her get her children into a better school, or one that is ready to leave the industry. And we are going to walk with her hand in hand. We're 3 years in and we don't know how long God's going to continue to allow us to have this opportunity. He opened this door when we were not expecting it. And we are so thankful for that. And we just want to continue to have open hands to however he's going to lead us. And just to be prepared for however we can, for whatever girls that he's going to allow us to continue to meet in his time.
Mm.
And truly continue to offer a no judgment zone. I mean, it really is important, I think, for us to share, not just with the women that we meet in the clubs, but the people in our community, that it's not easy anymore for me to hear somebody make a joke about the industry or the women in the industry. I'm very protective of them. I get very upset when someone makes light of that. I think education is key. I think back to how we all thought, oh, that was just a place where other people went and men go for bachelor parties or whatever in society, that we made that an okay thing. I know everybody likes to believe they're there on their own will and this is what they want to do. No one wants to do what they're doing. It's survival. They don't know how else to make money. This is a fast, easy way to make cash. And it's always been that way. It's been that way since biblical times. And women have given up of themselves to feed their children. And that's what's happening there. So to pretend that it's something other than that, I get really frustrated when people, you know, even the word entertainment, even though we use it to soften the word strip club and we say adult entertainment industry, this is not entertainment. When you've had a former dancer or a current dancer look at you and say, I feel like I've been raped every time someone touches me, that trauma is repeated over and over and over every night in a club. And other women can say all day that this is empowering to them and they're, you know, in control of their sexuality. I would question them when they're through whatever it is they're hiding from and they get through it on the other side and say, okay, really, you had to be that way. I mean, you hear them say, I had to be mean. I had to be the biggest, you know, bee in the room is what they say. You know, it's an eat or be eaten, kill or be killed mentality. That's not how God designed us. And it goes against, I think, everything that we do. But as humans, we've been forced sometimes into the survival mode.
Yeah.
Just as she was talking, I was thinking about for us when we started in this role and going into the clubs, we tried to find training and we would try to seek out different organizations that were doing something similar. And there were times that that door opened and we were able to learn from whether it was other survivors or other organizations doing a similar ministry. But really, for us, it was like God just said, I'm going to teach you. And so for these past 3 years, we have been walking really by faith and watching God open the door and really direct our steps each way. And he's been our teacher, and he has aligned women and aligned us with other ministries along the road that have been able to teach us and show us things. But we really just continue to walk by faith with him each day and what he's going to do next. I have a lot of goals and a lot of dreams and hopes, but really I just am trusting him. He's led us this far, and so I'm excited to see what he is going to do next as he teaches us about this ministry and about trauma. He has really been the one that has taught us about trauma and how to respond to women that are experiencing the trauma like these ladies are.
I'm sorry to interrupt this conversation, but we're going to just divide this episode in half. Make sure you come back next week to listen to part two of my conversation with Anne-Marie and Anne-Marie. Thanks for hanging out with me today on Find Hope Here. To find anything I mentioned on the episode, go to teresawhiting.com/listen. That's where you can find all the show notes. And remember to hit that subscribe button. If you want to go the extra mile and leave a review, that would be amazing and it would mean so much to me. I'd like to leave you with this prayer from Romans 15:13. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope.